After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BeHereNow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BeHereNow.
Resting in the body is difficult because unresolved trauma is locked in the body. There are sensations in the body, painful sensations. So that relaxation is really an act of faith. Relaxation is about trust and surrender, and trust and surrender are difficult as long as there's trauma there.
Welcome to Dale Borglum's Healing at the Edge. We are very happy to share with you Dale's profound insight and open heart. Please go to BeHereNowNetwork.com/Dale to support this podcast.
So welcome, everybody. Today, I would like to begin talking about receiving the body. And I thought a lot about the title. At first, I thought about inhabiting the body and then opening the body. And really, one of the points I'm going to be making as we unpack this and get into it is that the body is always existing. The body is not something we have to do. It's something we can drop into in a way. Certainly, we aren't the body. But I'm finding in my own busy life, and I'm sure that almost everybody in the room here has a fairly busy life, that it's a challenge at times to make your life a practice. And I find in my own practice that either saying a mantra or being with sensations or even some combination of that, where I'm saying a mantra and paying attention to the sensations in my heart, is one of the best ways to stay present. It's just mindfulness itself as I'm running around doing what I'm doing. It often is difficult to maintain a choiceless awareness when there's so much going on in the mind and the body, emotions, thoughts coming and going. So that really, when I look at it, I have three main practices: being with sensation, working with mantra, and then resting in presence when those other first two allow me to just be there in Rigpa, or complete openness, if you will. Somebody asked Trungpa Rinpoche, how do you exhaust karma? And he said, when things come up in your life, you feel them completely and fully and you don't hold back. You live them right through until they have completed themselves. And this doesn't apply only to what's difficult, but to what's pleasurable. And for me, and I think for a lot of people, the best way to live, or the most accessible way to live through things completely, is to experience them in the body. That when we're in the mind about what we're experiencing, we're not really fully present for what it is that's going on. To complete our karma, be able to receive what's going on in the body. We've talked before about grounding and centering. Grounding is grounding into the earth, the macrocosmic body that we share. Centering is centering into the microcosmic body, our own physical body. So we're going to be exploring embodiment perceived as emptiness. And we're not saying that the objects are empty, but the process of experiencing is empty in the sense that there's not grasping, there's not the need to conceptualize or label, to just rest in what it is that's arising. There is a danger in working with the body as one of the core pillars of spiritual practice. And that is that we can begin to judge ourselves when we are experiencing illness or trauma or painful sensations in the body. When we even look at the imagery and language about dealing with cancer, for instance, we're talking about the war on cancer, nuking tumors. There's a very aggressive me against the body kind of relationship. And before we begin a more subtle investigation of how to use the body, I just like to point out that there are at least two very serious things to not get stuck in. One is this, using the body as a metaphor. I'm sick because I wasn't spiritual enough. I have this response to trauma because I'm not spiritual enough. And the other is that we can use spirituality as a way of not being embodied. Okay, so getting lost in the body or getting lost in practice is a way of not being in the body. Being careful that we're receiving the body as it is without grasping. Resting in the body is difficult because unresolved trauma is locked in the body. There are sensations in the body, painful sensations. So that relaxation is really an act of faith. Relaxation is about trust and surrender, and trust and surrender are difficult as long as there's trauma there. So another thing to really pay attention here is that if in fact you've had serious trauma in your life, to just dive into the body is a delicate matter, that we really need to approach the body at a speed that's workable, that's not overwhelming, that the body, by going into the body, we're not deepening a sense of trauma. So trauma in the body is when we haven't completed the stress response. We either froze up or there was some fight or flight thing going on. The energy gets trapped in the body. And once again, spiritual practice can be used as a way of avoiding this trauma that's locked in the body. A very interesting study came out, I don't know, a year or two ago, showing that mindful stress in the body doesn't create the same inflammation and therefore cause illness in nearly the same way that unmindful stress does. The common assumption was that any stress causes inflammation in the body. Inflammation leads to heart disease, cancer, on and on and on. But mindful stress does not do that in the same way. In fact, they did this study, a huge study with 30,000 people, 10,000 people, high stress, no instruction. Second group, high stress, we're told to be trained to be mindful of stress. Third group, control group, high, medium, and low stress. And the high stress without any instruction died 38% more often than the other two groups. But interestingly enough, high stress with mindfulness created less inflammation than the control group that had high, medium, and low stress with no intervention at all. So being with intense emotion in the body is a way of avoiding inflammation, a way of just being beyond having to label what it is that we're experiencing. Stephen Levine, who I worked with a long time ago, one of the main things he did that was so brilliant was he talked about soft belly. And very often, when we're feeling stress, when we're having painful emotions, we tend to shove stuff down into the belly. And learning to drop down into the belly, the dark deep where we've shoved all this stuff, honoring the mother in terms of sensation, being there in this very full way is a very direct path toward healing. Western religion pretty much denies the body and teaches that God does not love the body. Christianity seems to make sexuality wrong. And we're going to go beyond that and talk about embodiment as a path to awakening, embodiment as a path to freedom. According to Buddhism, the unconscious is the body. Let me say that again. The unconscious is the body. It's a very powerful statement. And what we're saying here is that all the stuff that we haven't been able to consciously experience gets stored as stress in the body. So that just by being able to sit up straight with good posture and full relaxation allows all this stored material to gradually, sometimes not so gradually, begin to dissolve, to release, but we have to be there for it. The more grounded and centered we are, the more we can experience innate wholeness. So that in Hinduism, now we're going from Buddhism to Hinduism, there's something called the sanskaras, the unconscious stuff that we store. And exactly what we're talking about here is being conscious of the sanskaras as we're feeling them in the body. So I'd like to do an exercise together with you right now. I'd like to do it with eyes open. And the first thing is to begin to realize that it's very difficult, if not impossible, most moments, to both be experiencing sensations in the body and to be in your mind. Now, we know that being lost in the mind is the enemy of meditation in a certain sense. We struggle with the mind. And having this fact that you can't be in the body and in the mind at the same time, or at least it's extremely difficult to do that, gives us a clue here to a practice, which is dissolving thought into sensation. So with your eyes open, begin to notice when you're lost in the mind and when you can be with the sensations in the body. When you're lost in the mind, you might even feel there are sensations locked in the head. But can you, when you notice thought, dissolve into feeling sensation? Wherever you feel sensations predominating in the body, and just resting in sensation. Sensations exist in every part of the body. And can you even then go beyond feeling sensation in one place to having a global awareness of the body itself as a whole? And thoughts will arise because the ego doesn't like too much spaciousness. Thoughts will arise. We're not seeing thoughts as the enemy. Thoughts don't need to be repressed or suppressed or fought with. But they're a reminder that we can be resting in the present, and particularly in this case, in experiencing sensation. Eyes open. Sometimes there's thoughts, sometimes there's sensation. And as we can begin to feel sensation in the whole body, we can do the next step now of expanding sensation into presence with a capital P. That the body is a manifestation of true nature. It's not who we are. It's something we have. It's something we inhabit in a certain way. But can you be with the body as an expression of presence? Expand your field of vision so that you're softening your eyes. You're allowing visual impression to come to you. You're not using the eyes to go out and grasp what you're looking at. Maybe you're looking at this computer screen. Maybe you're looking at objects in the room. So expand awareness to include the entire field of vision. Soften any tension around your eyes so you can see the entire field of vision at once, and being with the global sensations in the body. So that we're, in a sense, waiting and allowing sensation to awaken and speak to you. Very often when we pay attention to the body, we pay attention in a very partial way to one place, and it feels very solid. There's tension in the belly. There's tension around the eyes. There's tension in your shoulders. And what we're doing here is, in a way, delocalizing, having a more global experience of sensation. And as we begin to more fully rest in this, you'll maybe begin to see that the body is primarily vibration, subtle energy without border. It's almost like a musical instrument. And that by really listening to it and tuning it, we come to this feeling of harmony, a choiceless welcoming of whatever it is that's arising. And it's, we could even get to the point where these objects of sensation that are arising are consciousness celebrating itself. Listening to the body gives freedom to the body, familiarizes with the ability to listen to what it is that's going on in the moment. So that we're going from paying attention to sensations to receiving them in a more global way to even an embodied non-duality. Using the body as a gateway to this easy seeing, this global perception of the body, and I'll ask you to do an even more difficult thing. What does it feel like in the body when you're lost in the mind? It's hard to do both of those at the same time, but when you're lost in the mind, my experience is there's a sense of contractedness. There's a sense of solidity in the body that is a representation of where we're grasping, where we're caught, where we feel separate, where we're not connected to God, where we're not connected to ourselves, where we're not connected to each other and the planet. I'd like to read you a short quote from a Buddhist monk, Bodhidharma. He's the monk who brought Zen to China. And see if you can keep doing this practice that we've been doing, just being with sensation, being with presence, letting the words come to you, not trying to figure out what this very Zen-like statement is trying to tell us. If you use your mind to study reality, you won't understand either your mind or reality. If you study reality without using your mind, you'll understand both. Those who don't understand understanding. And those who do understand, understand not understanding. Okay. People capable of true vision know that the mind is empty. So what he's saying is that when we're lost in the mind, we're not understanding, that we can't really receive reality conceptually. We need to let go of understanding. Krishnamurti wrote a wonderful book called Freedom from the Known. So that how do we have this freedom from the known? One way, you can keep saying a mantra. You can keep saying Ram, 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 Ram. And all you know is Ram. You know something. You know one thing. You know God. That's one way to do it. Another way is what we're talking about today, is that we're receiving the body. We're opening into the body and letting the body tell us how to respond to the next moment. The mind and the world are opposites, and vision arises when they meet. So that we've talked before about something I call the tantric three-step, which we're kind of approaching right now from a slightly different, more somatic angle. But the first step is when we're caught, when we're stuck in any kind of way, can we let go of the concepts and feel the sensation? What is going on right now? Without trying to figure it out or label it, but what does it feel like right now? Not what is my mental relationship with it? What does it feel like to be me right now? And then can I open my heart to that is step two. And then the third step is even this is presence. Even this is this tantric reality. Okay. So the wonderful Tibetan non-dual master Tilopa said, do nothing with the body but relax. And interestingly enough, in Hatha Yoga, the most difficult of all postures is the corpse pose, lying on your back and completely relaxing. Because to do it well, you have to completely relax, which almost nobody could do. We can't relax as long as we're grasping. Deeply relaxing while sitting with posture, being present in the body with intention, releases long-held clinging. So that what we're doing here is an opposite approach to meditation. Usually, we do a kind of a top-down thing where we go into our left brain and think about how can I approach my life? How can I approach my experience in a way that brings me more peace and calmness and equanimity? And what we're doing here is instead connecting with an inherent self-existing wakefulness that is always here, that's always present within the body itself. So in contrast to conventional approaches that emphasize entering into meditation through intentional thinking of the conscious mind and following conceptual instructions, we receive the body, trust the body, trust this relaxation into physicality. And then as we trust, we can begin to explore. we can begin to open and accept without any prejudice, any grasping, what it is we're feeling. Begin to expand and make more refined our experience of the body so it doesn't end at the edge of our skin. And that we begin to receive the body not as my body and my solid body, but this vibrating, energetic entity that really is at one level connected with all others, and in another level is identical, that there is one being, using the body to enter into the sense of non-dual awareness. I also find that a practice of combining being in the body and having a sense of devotion goes very well together. That the body is, in some ways, my relationship with the Divine Mother. In another sense, that I'm just receiving messages moment to moment, rather than I'm doing something, I'm fixing something, that there is a very loving acceptance of the radiant nature of the energy of the body, and particularly when I begin to feel more devotion, my chest, my heart begins to have very strong sensations. Rather than trying to produce that or increase that or grasp that because it feels so good, to notice the quality of surrender into the heart, learn to trust it more and more, to become more familiar with it, being able to talk like right now, to listen like right now, and have this embodied devotional awareness, if you will. Having loving awareness be the center of a practice. So that from Buddhist language, we're talking about first shamatha, calm abiding in the body, deepening into vipassana, where we're having, we're being aware of the insights that arise as we're resting in the body. Calm abiding in the body, exploring, investigating, trusting. And for me, this process helps me get out of the position of I'm the meditator who has to do something and maybe do something better, but that there's a quality of receiving going on, rather than a sense of doing going on, receiving the body, receiving sensations, receiving messages, receiving love, receiving support, receiving comfort, receiving nourishment, moment to moment to moment. So in a way, we're talking about moving from a more yogic relationship with the body, where we're trying to open the body, do something with the body, to this more tantric realization that the body is already a pure manifestation of wholeness, and that we can rest in that pure manifestation of wholeness. The mind is also a pure manifestation, but it's much, much trickier. It's much more manipulative. It's much easier to get lost in. The body keeps the score. The body tells us what's going on. And whether we're using this as a way of revealing and healing past trauma, a way of deepening our meditative practice, of deepening our relationship with the divine. The body is always there. And so many people in the West have an adversarial relationship with the body. Everybody is addicted until they're free. You're addicted, I'm addicted to understanding or excitement or knowing or the things we put in our mouth or come out of our mouth, whatever it might happen to be. These addictions almost always show up in the body. And to begin to notice that sense of tightness, that sense of going unconscious, instead of the sense of more global, expansive, resting, receiving, is a very direct way of working with addiction, working with grasping. So that we're not looking at the thought process, the involuntary thought process, as an enemy. The thought process can be voluntary. When we need to think, you can be embodied and you can think. What we're talking about most of the day is involuntary thought as a way of avoiding being present, addictive thought. Letting sensations awaken and speak to us. And then at the far end of practice, going into non-duality, surrendering into wholeness, as we're receiving these sensations, who is it that's receiving the sensations? Is there actually an I who's sitting here in the chair right now, who's feeling my butt on the chair and my elbows on the arms of the chair and my neck on my shoulders and all that stuff? Or is there just sensation arising, consciousness meeting sensation, sometimes grasping, sometimes not grasping, and noticing how the relationship with sensations itself reveals the sense of wholeness, and that allows us gradually to trust this total relaxation into sensation. So let's open this up for discussion. If anybody would like to make any comments about this. And then in the second half of the day today, we'll have conversation about anything at all. But right now, would anybody like to say anything about this somatic approach to surrendering into wholeness?
Susie has her hand up, Ramdev.
Okay, please.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Susie. And the one thing I noticed, Dale, is that when sitting, maybe it's because I meditate a lot, my eyes, I had to fight my eyes from staying open. And I don't know whether other folks experience that, but it kind of took my mind away from the really relaxation of the whole when I'm fighting my eyes to keep from closing. So anyway, that's just more of a comment. And maybe there's a way to kind of ground myself so that doesn't happen. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. In certain schools of Tibetan Buddhism and Zen, people always meditate with their eyes open, with an easy glance, looking down a little bit. And I've done a lot of meditation retreats with my eyes closed and got very good at being this remarkable person when my eyes were closed and not so much when my eyes were open. And I figured, well, wait a minute. So like when I'm driving and I'm not meditating, then what happens? Or when I'm talking to somebody and looking at them, then what happens? So I get that. If you have a lot of conditioning that you meditate with your eyes closed, then it's harder to do what I was suggesting today. And certainly cutting out the visual input as a way of focusing on what's going on inside can be useful at times. It lets us see in a very clear way things that we often get distracted by when we're looking around. Visually is one of the visual channel is one of the main channels that leads to grasping. After a retreat is over and people start talking and moving around, I notice that looking out there and looking at stuff throws me into my mind. So to begin to practice easy seeing, as I was saying before, like right now, when you're looking around the room, just stop looking at the computer or phone in front of you. Look around the room a little bit and see if you can allow visual impression to come to you rather than this more aggressive or acquisitive sense of my eyes are reaching out there and grasping stuff. Can you be with the sensations in your body and just allowing then visual impression to come to you? Easy seeing, soft seeing. It's like you're seeing everything for the first time. Everything is fresh. Everything is awake. And then you see something and there's some connotation or some emotional charge and you jump into your mind and you start grasping or you start pushing away. The body probably slightly holds back or leans forward barely perceptibly. Okay. So I think it's important to practice being present with your eyes open, even though it might not be the easiest thing to do at first. So who is next in the line here?
iPad.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. I just had a little sweet story to share that happened to me, gosh, many, many years ago, probably in the early 70s. I happened to be out front talking to my mailman as he was walking by, and he was sharing with me about this person that he listened to as he was on his route, you know, delivering his mail. And his name was Roy Masters. And he did a radio broadcast out of LA back in the early 70s. And he ended up kind of in a, you know, going off being a kook after that. But he did this simple meditation practice. And it was the most profound experience that happened to me in meditation. And it was just basically you just drop into your heart and you visualize your hand. You just do a visualization on your hand. And through that meditation, I experienced for the first time the separation between mind and body. And it was like such a profound experience. And it's like, even when I share about that experience, it just resonates in my heart because it was just so, it's like truth, like goes right to the heart like an arrow and just, you know, opens the heart in such a beautiful way. And it's just something that's been with me all my life. And I just thought it was a sweet story to share.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Nicholas.
Just very briefly, I heard somewhere that sound is perceived with the back of the head. I don't have any scientific evidence for that. And so when I'm meditating, I do kind of a seesaw where I close my eyes. And when the chatter comes, I open my eyes and that balances a lot of the talking in my head. So it's sort of like I go from the being inside to sort of having a soft case and allowing the outside to balance the sound in the back of my head. And that has worked for me.
Okay. So you say you're putting your attention in the back of the inside of your skull?
When I'm meditating and my eyes are closed, let's say I'm meditating now and there's a lot of chatter.
Right.
I open my eyes softly to counteract the chatter.
Okay.
So I do opening and closing my eyes just very gently.
Okay. Okay. That sounds like it could work. Let me mention another practice that I thought you were saying, but I guess you weren't, is everybody right now could put your attention in the back of your head, inside. Instead of your attention out in your eyes, just imagine your attention at the back of the inside of your skull, behind your eyes, but in the back. This is a Tibetan practice that is very powerful in releasing attachment to the thinking process. Gary, did you want to say something, my friend?
Thank you. Yes, Dale. Listening to you today, I was reminded that the body has been described as the principal karmic reflection. And so I'm wondering, you know, as you talk about attending to our somatic experience, whether you think that's a good way to help us notice or sort of differentiate, interpret, you know, our experience in terms of karma. Does that sound helpful to you?
To me, what I've been...
I mean, you were saying the body is the reflection of the unconscious, right?
Yeah.
And if the unconscious is where our karmic experience is occurring, I'm just, you know, asking if that sounds like a way to view it that can yield something useful.
Well, two things. One is that I find that being in sensations is, for me, one of the two easiest ways to not be lost in conceptual thinking. The other is to be repeating a simple mantra, which is just having the mind on one thing, but being in the body is beyond conceptual. I mean, it can fall into conceptual relationship, but it's a way of not being in the conceptual mind. And secondly, it, as you suggest, and as I made that rather bold statement, the body is the unconscious. That by being in the body, we will eventually, by being fully in the body, we release all the stuff that's trapped in the body, all the stress that's trapped in the body. We make conscious that which has been unconscious, right? Something that happened 20 years ago and now determines how you walk or how you move your arm. As we relax and pay attention to sensations, that those things release and come out. And then the third thing is that by being in the body in this way, it's to me a very direct portal into non-duality, right? That we go beyond my body feels good, my body doesn't feel good. It's just sensations being received, and which is going beyond a healing process of I'm trying to deal with all the stuff that's locked in there, but just being with the body just the way it is. And as you know, I am the director of the Living Dying Project, working with people who have critical illness. And imagine, which maybe isn't too hard for Gary, imagine having a critical illness and you're having sensations in the body. Maybe you're having sensations in the part of your body that the doctor says this part of your body might kill you. And can you be with those sensations without saying, this means I'm getting better, the chemo is working, this means I'm getting worse, the chemo isn't working, but being with sensation, being free in that part of the body, not seeing the body as the enemy that needs to be subdued or understood even in a certain way. And that takes a profound leap into surrender to not be in this let's fix it mode. I don't know if I answered your question at all, but I had a chance to say a few things I wanted to say at least.
No, that was great. Thank you.
Okay. You're very welcome. Okay. Aileen? Or however you, I'm sorry, I can't. How do you spell you? How do you pronounce your name?
Is it me?
It's you.
Oh, hey. Hi. That's Anya.
Anya. Okay.
Yeah. You may already have answered the question, and thank you for that meditation. It was really beautiful. When I did it, for the first time, I was surprised to feel sensations I had never felt in my body. Up along my skull really surprised me to feel that. So is it an invitation to release those sensations or to massage them? Or is it just simply paying attention to them and not trying to fix, just a presence and an awareness?
Yeah, that last one.
A presence so, is an awareness.
Yeah, so, I mean, certainly there will be surprising sensations. There will be very pleasant sensations. There will be very unpleasant sensations the more we relax. And there's obviously a lot of conditioning behind, I've got to fix the unpleasant sensations. I've got to have more of those pleasant ones. I don't know if we've ever done a group here about physical pain, but even the word pain is, there's an implication that unpleasant sensation is something we should fix. And if you you might at some point experience a pain in your body that's never going to go away. And if we're all at the mercy of only feeling good when there's only pleasant sensations in the body, we're in a very vulnerable position. Is it possible to be joyful even though there's unpleasant sensations in the body? So to me, it's a lot about curiosity. Oh, look at that. There's sensations in my skull in a place that I didn't even feel anything before. For a while, I studied in something called the Ridwan School, the Diamond Heart School here in with a guy named Hamid Ali. And I began to notice that I couldn't feel my lower belly, that being a six on the Enneagram, I had a certain hole in my energy body that I couldn't experience at all. And I'd go into this kind of therapy session every week, and my non-therapist would say, bring your attention down there. And it's the last thing I wanted to do. I had a hole there in my perception of my body. And every time she got me to do it, it felt so wonderful. But I just did it kicking and screaming. I didn't want to do it on my own. It was my core wound manifest in my body. And after several months of her gently guiding me to experience that, I began to love being in that place. But it was sure not something I was going to do on my own, right? So that maybe you can do it on your own. I'm just particularly stubborn, maybe. But what I'm saying is that by here you have brand new sensations in your head, and there's an impulse then to say, oh, this is new, this is different, what should I do with this? Just let it be what it is. To me, it's almost like surfing the present moment or surfing sensation. And as soon as you try to figure out the wave, you fall off and you got to get back and do a bunch of paddling again, right? So there's those sensations and they're going to change to some other sensations and other. And again, coming back to what it feels like.
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. Owen. I knew you were going to ask a question today. I was just watching your face. I knew you were going to ask a question.
Okay. I was wondering about what the relationship is between this way of receiving the body and the way of being in your body where you're actively doing something, say, that you love to do, and you're just doing it in a flowing, open way. Like my example would be playing basketball. I love to play basketball, and there's a way that I have of shooting the ball in a sort of floating motion. And if I'm really in my body, it usually always goes in.
Right.
Yeah. So that's my question. What's the relationship between these two different, I assume they're sort of different, but somewhat related ways of being in your body?
I'm going to hit the mute button here just because of the dog. And if anybody wants to talk, just please unmute yourself. Yeah, that's a great question. And I guess my experience is if I'm sitting still, I'm meditating, there's a very different way of receiving sensation. It can be a lot more subtle than if I'm running around on a basketball court or riding a bicycle or, you know, doing something where there's a lot of movement and sensory impression coming in. But really, Owen, I think it's fundamentally the same thing, that when you're in that flow, when you're playing basketball, when you're really in your body, you're naturally doing this meditation that we're talking about, that you're, as you're flying through the air with a ball in your hand, you're as you're not lost in your mind, your body is making the adjustments to, here's where the ball is going to go, here's the way I'm breathing, all those things are just happening naturally. So that I would highly, highly expect that if Willie Mays is catching a fly ball or Berezhnikov is leaping on the stage, that they're not saying, okay, I've got to pay attention to my sensations. But they're also not thinking about, how do I do this? They're just letting the body take over and do it. And is it possible then to let the body take over when you're speaking in public? Is it possible to let the body take over when the doctor tells you you have cancer, etc.? So that we talked about a kind of a sequence here of beginning to be with sensation and then let it be a lot more global and refined, letting thought dissolve into sensation, letting sensation dissolve into presence. From another language, we could start out and talk about being grounded and centered. That in the beginning, there is some intention. I am going to put my attention in being grounded in the first couple chakras and then put my attention in the first chakra, grounding, second, third chakra, centering, so that I am doing something. And for many of us, because we haven't really inhabited the lower part of the torso, we approach sensations more from a way even of maybe avoiding problems or getting lost in problems than allowing them to be there and not even be problems anymore, and just be that's what is. So whether you're doing a martial art or whether you're meditating, this process of surrender, of being able to be non-volitional and inhabiting and receiving, is very challenging to the ego structure. So in the beginning, when you're first learning to ride a bike, when you're first learning to play basketball, I was on a vacation with my son and we went to a golf pro. My son got a golf lesson. And he did really, really well. The pro, he'd never golfed before. The pro was really surprised how good he was. And then a couple of days later, we came back to the golf course without the pro, and he couldn't even hit the ball at all because he kept thinking, what did he tell me to do? I should have my arms this way and my feet that way. It was so remarkably different because he was trying to do it, right? And that's just golf. I mean, how about loving another human being or having a body that's really sick or being a Republican or whatever, right? Something really super challenging. Okay. Did that answer that at all? I'm not answering questions, but okay. Thank you for letting me off. One more, and then we're going to take a break. Ian.
Hi, everyone. Hey. I'll make this quick. One thing that came to mind is I twice before I did a meditation, like in New York City with this Buddhist group, and we sat by the subway steps and just sat there for an hour while everybody walks by and right. looks at you and all this stuff. And I'm not sure where I went. Sorry, my video died, but.
That's okay.
Okay. So anyway, it was like one of the hardest meditations, but there were a couple of moments where I kind of like was able to feel that, you know, that that meditation of like just it's all phenomenon passing. But that was a useful experience. And I thought I'd share that. My question was, I've heard many times Ram Dass recount the story of how he sits with a woman that's dying, and she had extreme pain, cancer in her body. And she basically he said he sat in a chair and like he did this meditation where, you know, she dropped into her heart, but then she was in such pain, but she was also in ecstasy.
Right.
And he said there's like almost like a blue luminous light from the room. And I kind of feel like what I'm hearing with this meditation is a bit similar to that. Do you have any? I've never spoken to anybody about this, but do you have any knowledge or insight into that meditation? And is it something that a specific one or something that, that you practice with your patients, your clients?
Yeah, I've heard Ram Dass tell that story about 10 times and I don't really remember. So what's your recollection of what he did? He just saw the woman as whole or what did he do? I don't remember even, to be honest with you.
Sat in a chair and she was dying. She had cancer in her bones and she was in immense pain and she was lying there. And, he dropped into the heart and basically she was able to like experience the whole thing as though she ended up feeling, she was like, I'm in such ecstasy and I would not change this experience for any other experience.
Right.
Even though she was dying painfully of cancer.
Right. Right.
And so it sounded very powerful.
So Maharaji died of a heart attack. Ramakrishna and Ramana Maharshi died of cancer. Both Ramakrishna and Ramana Maharshi died of painful cancers. I don't think they had cancer-prone personality types particularly, of course. So Maharaji said very clearly, I'm not this body. The guru is not this body. He said, I'm the whole universe, even at times. So that the hope here is we don't have to wait until we're almost dying to realize we're not the body. And we can use the body, our relationship with the body, our experience of our sensations as a way of getting that we aren't the body, that we're the woman before who told the story about being in her heart and being with her hand at the same time and seeing that she wasn't the body and how remarkable that was for her is in a way pointing to what we're getting at here. That I don't know what Ram Dass exactly did in that moment. And I even know the woman that he was talking about. And I've had similar experiences with people who were in a lot of pain. And without me doing any particular meditation even, but just being there with them, I said, how are you feeling? And they say, I have never felt better in my life, because they were getting that they weren't the body, that sometimes dying with physical pain is easier than dying without pain, because the pain ejects you, can eject you from identification with your physicality. So that as long as you are going around, or I am going around thinking I am this body, and the body's having a hard time, I'm having a hard time, you're having a hard time. But to the extent we're realizing that we're not the body, we're not the mind, we have a body, we have a mind, they're objects of consciousness, then we can be resting in wholeness, which is intrinsically joyful, and be having unpleasant sensations or experiences going on at the same time. Right? And in a way, you're really getting exactly at the point that is the core of today's exploration together, which is that we can use relationship with sensations to have a much more global relationship with experience, not be lost in the mind, not be caught in grasping at each passing thought, watching how involuntary thought separates us from inhabiting the body fully, receiving the body, and without seeing the mind as the enemy, being able to rest in the state of flow where we can play basketball, we can love another human being, we can be a cancer patient who's not freaked out all the time. So don't wait till you're dying or you're next to somebody who's dying, but like right now, can we be in that sense of joyfulness that is beyond the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral quality of the arising experience? Once again, the Tibetans say that compassion is the combination of sadness and joy. Compassion is the heart meeting suffering, the open heart meeting suffering. And to the extent then that our heart is open, we feel this joy that isn't dependent on what we're experiencing, but we're also feeling sad because what we're experiencing is suffering. Everybody in the world is experiencing suffering at some time or another, a lot of the time or another, right? That's a sad thing. And there's this joyfulness that transcends happiness and sadness, which now we're applying to the relationship with sensation. Simple as that. Having a compassionate relationship with sensation. Many of you work with sensation as a meditation practice. That could be extended maybe to a compassionate body scan. As your attention is going through your body, you're not just feeling the sensations in your shoulders and in your face and in your belly. You're having a compassionate experience of the sensations in your body, right? Oh, there's tension in my shoulders. And then you let go of my and shoulders. Oh, there's unpleasant sensation. Can my heart be open? And you're just exploring then how to learn to be open, moment to moment to moment. Moment to moment to moment. Talking too much. Let's take a 5-minute break. Let's say we'll meet at 10:15, quarter past the hour, wherever you happen to be.
You got it.
What'd I do without John? That's the question of my life. Thank you, John. So let's do a guided meditation, and then we'll have some more conversation. Please begin by invoking that which you trust. That which receives the body. That which doesn't change nor die. Trusting that you can be with that which arises without needing to fix or understand. And in the beginning, volitionally, do a few grounding breaths. Imagine you're pushing energy out through the base of your torso into the earth of support and nourishment, abundant grounding energy, and as you breathe in, receiving this energy. I doing a dualistic practice, getting grounded, receiving grounding. And then becoming centered, doing some centering breaths. Same practice, except breathing into the lower belly. And begin to shift from I am getting centered to centering is happening, rather than an objective experience. It's subjective. You're dropping down into the belly, the sense of I, dropping down into the center of gravity of who you are. So that it's as if you could hear my voice from your belly. You're paying attention from your belly instead of paying attention to your belly. Dying into this quality of being centered with each exhalation. And then beginning to notice how you can't be with the sensations of being centered and being lost in your mind at the same time. Again and again, without seeing the mind as the enemy or a problem, coming back to this quality of being centered. And then even beginning to expand your sense of the sensations you're paying attention to, of not just your belly, but a more global sense of your body. Just resting in this vibrating, subtle, each moment arising and passing away flow of sensation. You can do this with your eyes open. You can try it with your eyes closed. dissolving thought into sensation when the thought arises, the thought being the reminder to surrender into this openness. And then letting sensation dissolve into presence, into beingness, into the sacred nature of each arising. Sensation, our relationship with sensation, being the portal into resting without effort, in the nature of experience, the nature of our being. Feeling the whole inside of your body at once. And then feel the space outside of your body also. And then even the space filling the whole room. Having the direct perception that the space inside the body and outside the body is the same. Continuous space, continuous awareness. Pervading you and everything. And as we're aware of this spaciousness, it's essentially becoming aware of awareness itself. Awareness pervading space, being aware of this. Awareness pervading both everything outside and inside the body at the same time. Sensations continue to arise, the sound of my voice, other perceptions. Our relationship with reality arising through our receiving of sensation. Connecting with the always existing wakefulness, always present within the body, outside the body, rather than a contrived approach of trying to enter the meditative state through intentional thinking. Resting in this quality of receiving. non-grasping. Experiencing awareness pervading your entire body and the environment outside of your body at one and the same time. This spaciousness naturally arises compassionate activity, the wish that all other beings, including yourself, be free from suffering. The wish that all beings might rest in the boundless nature of our reality. Resting in the spaciousness and realizing that there is suffering. At the same time. Letting the heart be moved by the depth of suffering in the world. Yet trusting the nature of our being. That is the end of the meditation. Does anybody have any remarks or questions or comments about anything that they would like to bring forward? Carrie.
Thank you. This has been really a blessing to hear today. I've been really stress this week. And I just wanted to say one time I was on the main floor. I've got an office up here in the attic, but I was on the main floor and I was feeling stressed in my body. And it was like a voice from the beyond, just sort of I heard, what if it were, nothing was here. You were in a void and everything was unpleasant. And like maybe a Ray Bradbury book, everything was unpleasant. And I just, you know, like everything swirling and unpleasant and the air smell was foul. Everything was bad. And I just, I mean, I've been able to drop down into my nature of being a couple times with one with plant medicine, one with internal family systems, a therapist that has some connections to my spiritual community. And this time it was another time I was able to drop down really deeply. And I felt this profound gratitude and reverence for everything that I was seeing around me, just even the simplest things that I, you know, would take for granted usually, but just this, it was so that sense of dropping way down like that stayed with me for quite a while that afternoon. I'm thankful for my teachers, like, you know, like you and others who helped me just, even though I'm in the midst of all this stress, just something that will happen because of teachers like you and others that I get messages to drop way down, and I can, the more I practice it, the more I can do it, you know? And so I was very thankful for that day.
Wonderful. Yeah, sometimes things have to, sometimes when it's like a Ray Bradbury novel and it couldn't get any worse, that's the best inspiration for practice. I remember once I was on a bus in India, a local bus. I was on a pilgrimage up high up in the mountains, and it was a super crowded Indian bus, like a stereotypical with chickens and twice as many people as should be on the bus. And I was shoved up against the side of the inside of the bus. The window was broken and it started raining. And all the dirt from top of the bus started washing down because the window was broken. It was all coming on my right shoulder. So there was this cold, dirty rain just covering half of my body. And I'm sitting there and I was in ecstasy. I was just saying God's name and feeling, well, I'm dirty and I'm tired and it's cold. And it's God. I mean, I wasn't really saying that with my mind, but the physical plane became so unpleasant that I just kind of inhabited this other place that was just ecstatic and beyond it all. So I think the trick is not waiting till it gets so horrible that we're in a Ray Bradbury novel, but seeing if we could do that in a more day-to-day kind of a way. Thank you for that great story, Carrie. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else want to say anything?
Rhonda?
Yeah.
Brenda posted a question in the chat. The somatic subject of today's talk is so helpful. Where can we learn more about this?
Ah, an impossible question. So where can we learn more about there's so many ways to approach somatic practice, for sure. There are martial arts. There is surprisingly little written, though, about sort of embodied non-duality, if you will. I can mention a few people. So first of all, there's a guy named Will Johnson. He's a younger guy. He's a meditator. He's got some articles on Tricycle. And he talks in a very intelligent way about embodied mindfulness, I think he might call it. And then there's a guy named Reggie Ray, who was a student of Trungpa Rinpoche. And he, I don't remember the name of his book. It might be written under the name Reginald Ray, Reggie Ray. It's a lovely book about somatic practice. I will confess that he got in a lot of trouble by not being a very kind person with his satsang. There was some emotional abuse going on, and he got kicked out of his position as head of the Sangha. But apparently people can have their own problems and write pretty good books occasionally. And then there's a woman named Judith Blackstone, who wrote a book that might be called Embodied Mindfulness. No, I'm sorry, Embodied Non-Duality. I think she has a book called that, where she talks about exactly what we're talking about here today with another kind of language. Those are the three people I know of. I'm a very big proponent of, and Will Johnson talks about this too, of good posture when you're meditating. To be able to sit so that your torso is on your hips and your neck is on your torso and your head is on your neck, and it's like a skyscraper that gravity is taking care of itself. Everything's balanced on something else. Like if you're slumped or in a bad posture, you're always fighting physicality. So to be able to find a posture where you can rest in your body without having to struggle to relax is, I find, incredibly useful. And you can, I hope this doesn't sound too judgmental, because it's not, but you can look at people and see how they're sitting when they're meditating and really infer a lot about what their meditation is like, right? If somebody's really balanced and sitting there like that, then the energy's flowing easily. And if somebody's like trying or collapsing, or it's all represented in the body. So there's Thich Nhat Hanh, for instance, talked about half smile meditation, where you're not smiling because you're meditating because you're smiling, right? You sit there and you put a little smile on your face, and then you start meditating, right? You let the somatic expression lead the practice rather than the other way around. So there's something to be said for that. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's the best I've got. Okay. Well, maybe this is such a great talk that there's nothing more to be said, and we can go play a little bit earlier on this weekend. But I'm sure glad that we don't have to talk about somatics. Anybody want to make a comment about anything? 49ers are playing the Eagles this weekend, right? That's a big deal. No? That scared a few people away, probably. Carly, you don't have anything to say? I can't believe it.
Well, I was going to talk and then I wasn't, but I can, since you called me out. I feel like about 3.5 days out of this last week were constant mindfulness bells. I work from home. It's my busiest week of the year as an inventory manager for a jewelry designer. And we got a new roof. So there are many metaphors in getting a new roof. Not just the sound, because I thought I can handle the noise. I'll be fine. Not knowing the somatic experience of the body would show up, I kind of discounted that a little bit. So there was a lot of self-soothing going on. Also, you know, just moments of deep compassion for what people go through when they're in traumatic environments like war-torn areas or abusive homes or violent relationships. I used the experience quite a lot, like what you explained today, with some success and many failures. but I think the failures showed me where I am in this human body and as a person, which is helpful. And then also, you know, I have endometriosis. And so that pain that I experience, I have reached both the fighting place where I try to fight it, which doesn't turn out well. And then also the not resignation, but surrender to the pain. And it is both the most extreme suffering and the most beautiful moments of my life, in which my heart just opens up, not just for everybody else, but for myself. So, and even this week with the roof, you know, I wasn't supposed to have the entire roof torn off. Part of it was supposed to stay and it didn't. And a lot of beautiful things in our attic were damaged. And they're just things. But they're also memories of Sudhu's father, who died a year ago yesterday. So it has been both a tremendously beautiful and terrifying week for me. And I am grateful beyond measure for all the lessons and all the love that I have in my heart. So thank you for today, Dale. I appreciate it a lot. And thank you all for being wonderful human beings and being who you are in everything that you are, in all of your shit and all of your beauty. You are absolutely awesome and amazing souls. I know you are. Thanks, Dale. And I'm damn grateful that I have a roof to be torn off because I have a home.
Right.
So I'm remarkably blessed.
Jeff, you want to say something?
Yeah. Thanks, Carly, for sharing. I would like to just share something that it's been going on in the last few years of my life. I recovered from a very deep depression. And throughout this journey, I've started to listen to Ram Dass and attend your workshop, Dale, and participate in the Saturday spiritual group like this one and a couple of others. I started looking in the 12-step program because I've had some alcohol problems. And so through the deepening of my work, I have come to realize that when they say in the religious context to be God's instrument in this life actually means a lot of different things. And one of those is keeping the mind and the body in the best shape possible, because it's a temple that we have to rely on to do the work. And so sharpening the mind, taking care of the body, eating healthy, going for exercise, quitting alcohol, this purification process it's its own reward. Mm. And it brings me closer to God every time I take care of myself, my relationships. And every time I bond with my daughter, I spend time with her, cultivating her skills, giving her time, attention, affection, guidance, discipline, all that stuff is, it's all God's work. So in order to do God's work, I need to be clean with God, and I need to become the person, not just understanding intellectually, but start to practice compassion. I started to volunteer with your organization and with a couple others, moving from knowing to doing, and ultimately to being. And it's a hell of a journey, and there's no destination. There's only the journey. And I just want to share that with the group, and I'm sure all of you can appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks so much. Well, then, we can end a few minutes early here. Thank you all so very much. We'll meet again in a couple of weeks. It's always a joy to be with everyone and a privilege. I wish you the best as we approach the darkest time of the year. And we're very grateful here. California escaped pretty much wildfires this year. At least in our neighborhood here, there wasn't much smoke, which was a real blessing. So be well. And if there's any way that you want to stay in touch with the project, everything we've talked about, the calendars on the website, we exist on donations. If you'd like to make a donation, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you so much. Take care.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BeHereNow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/BeHereNow.